Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast for September 2014. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr, LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. We've all heard something about what's happening in Europe about the Unitary Patent and the Unified Patent Court. The Unitary Patent is a single patent for all of Europe, at least for those countries who eventually sign on. It'll have the same legal effect and provides the same patent protection across the participating countries in Europe. When the Unitary Patent System comes into place, there will also be a Unified Patent Court that has exclusive jurisdiction over unitary patents. The Unified Patent Court will be able to grant a Europe-wide injunction, as well as declare the unitary patent invalid across Europe. Catherine Stevens is a partner at Bird & Bird and the joint head of their intellectual property department in London. In addition to having a master's degree in mechanical engineering, Catherine is active in patent litigation, particularly multi-jurisdictional. She has particular expertise in litigating in electronics, computer technology, and telecommunications patents. Catherine recently presented a paper at a meeting of the American Intellectual Property Law Association about the Unitary Patent and the Unified Patent Court. I spoke with Catherine from her office in London, England. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Don.
In your paper, you talk about the Unitary Patent and the Unified Patent Court. Let's start with the European Patent with Unity Effect, or Unitary Patent, the UP. What is it, or what will it be?
Well, the Unitary Patent is a single patent that has the same legal effect and protection across participating member states. It may only be assigned, limited, or revoked as a whole, so it stands or falls as a whole.
In how many member states will a Unitary Patent be effective?
Well, the Unitary Patent comes into effect 3 months after a minimum of 13 countries, which must include the UK, France and Germany, have ratified the agreement on the Unified Patents Court. At present, 5 countries have ratified, including France. Therefore, the very first UPs may only be granted in those member states which are signed up to this agreement on the Unified Patents Court, and that could be 13, or it could be more. There are at present 25 who are member states who have said that they're going to sign, so it could be up to 25, but at present we don't know.
And what's the purpose of the Unitary Patent? Isn't there already a European patent that covers even more countries?
Yeah, you're right. At present, a traditional European patent could be granted in as many as 38 countries, as opposed to the 25 potential member states of the Unitary Patent. However, the major driving force for the Unitary Patent has been to close the competitive gap between the EU and the US and China. Traditional European patents are basically a bunch of national rights. That means once they've been granted by the EPO, they must be registered at the national level for each country that a patentee wants protection in. Whilst a unitary patent will provide protection in all member states which are signed up to the agreement.
So what's the theory on how the unitary patents will succeed in closing the so-called competitiveness gap?
Well, the European Commission stated a couple of years ago that registering an EP in all member states incurred a cost of approximately €36,000 in procedural and translation costs. This compares to approximately €2,000 in the US and €600 in China. So the real differences with this new system will be that there will be only one fee on grant. And at the moment, although I've given you some approximate costs, we don't exactly know how much it's going to be because those fees have yet to be set. But the Commission has stated that they think that they're going to bring down the costs to grant during, first of all, a transitional period of 12 years to approximately €6,500, going down to €5,000 after that. the difference being because during the transitional period there's going to be an additional requirement for translations.
And I understand there's also a litigation effect on this as well, is that right?
That's right, yes. There'll be, the fact is that this unitary patent will only be litigated in one court for all the countries it covers, whereas at the moment traditional European patents have to be granted in the national courts where that where individual patents have been granted.
So once the unitary patent system is in place, will all of the European patent applications automatically grant as unitary patents?
No. The patentee must opt in within 1 month of the patent being mentioned as being granted in the European Patents Bulletin. There is a 2-month grace period built in after that. Otherwise, the patent will grant as a traditional European patent and will need to be validated in each of the patentee's countries of choice.
And what happens to European patents that have already been granted?
Well, unlike patent applications, pre-existing granted European patents will remain this bunch of national rights. However, it was recognized that a transitional period was required because the unified patents court system changes the rules so dramatically. The transitional provisions therefore provide that a patentee can opt out of the system during the transitional period, which at the moment is set for a period of 7 years, but can be extended for another 7 years. So the key issue for patentees is going to be whether they take advantage of this opt-out ability. If they do nothing, for the purposes of the court system, their traditional European patent can be subject to the jurisdiction of the UPC in the same way as a unitary patent. But if they decide to opt out, then each national part of the European patent will remain subject to the jurisdiction of that national court.
And can patentees opt in or opt out whenever they like?
No, although there is some flexibility built into the system. Pre-existing European patents that have been opted out may be withdrawn unless a court action has been started. Patentees can only get one opt-out, though, and once it is withdrawn, there is no possibility of opting back in again.
Mm-hmm.
As well, if an action has been started in respect of the patent in the Unified Patents Court, the UPC, opting out is no longer available because effectively once litigation has started, it's fixed the patent in that particular system.
So what are the pros and cons of opting in or out of the unitary patent?
Well, opting in gives you the benefit of making enforcement easier. It's one single infringement action that is binding on all the countries that are in the system. But opting out protects the patent from a single validity attack in the court system that could invalidate the patent in all member states that have signed up to the unitary patent.
The Unified Patent Court is a big part of enforcing the new rights under the unitary patent regime. You said in your paper that it's key to the unitary nature of the unitary patent. Could you expand on this? What problems is the unitary patent court seeking to address? Or unified patent court. Sorry, they keep changing the U's.
Yes. Unified Patents Court. Well, the unitary patent will stand or fall as a whole. Therefore, one of the big advantages of this system is that an injunction awarded by the UPC will stop infringement and grants protection over a potential market of 0.4 billion people. As I've said, the flip side of that is that a single decision of the UPC could invalidate the entire unitary, unified patent in one fell swoop. So as you can see, compared to the current European enforcement model, where a patentee has to basically fight the patent country by country, this new system will reduce multiple litigation costs, and it will also avoid contradictory decisions being made by national courts.
And will you only be able to litigate unitary patents in the Unified Patent Court?
Well, the UPC has exclusive jurisdiction over UPs and concurrent non-exclusive jurisdiction with national courts over traditional European patents during the transitional period. But once a European patent is opted out, the UPC no longer has jurisdiction over it.
Now, I understand with respect to the Unified Patent Court that different countries are going to specialize in different technical subject matter. Could you explain that?
Yep. That's true for the central division, where revocation actions are going to be started and where cases are going to be referred by national and regional courts. Therefore, Paris is going to be a specialist in electronics, London in life sciences, and Munich in mechanical engineering. However, the national and regional courts where infringement actions are started will not be specializing.
Now, you suggest in your paper a patent filing strategy where patentees file parent and divisional patents in different categories. Sort of one is an EP and one is a UP. Could you explain that strategy?
Yes, well, this is one possible strategy which patentees might adopt while waiting to see how the system will settle down. So if you have a parent patent of narrow scope, such as a preferred embodiment of the invention, and a divisional patent of broader scope, such as a broadly defined invention, that would spread the risk if one is a unified patent, if one is a European patent. Any invalidation attack on the one will leave the other intact, and therefore it could protect the patentee's rights following this possible strategy. However, it could be quite costly, but it does save you from the all-eggs-in-one-basket scenario.
And besides the cost, are there any other risks for that strategy?
There are, of course, the rules on double patenting. You can't have a parent and divisional for exactly the same scope. But the rules on double patenting are quite strict in that the two patents have to be effectively identical in their scope. And so there is the ability to follow this strategy if the patentee is prepared to spend the cost on doing so.
You advise patentees to develop a strategy for the management of their portfolio sooner rather than later. What are a few of the biggest factors that will influence a patentee's decision when it comes to choosing whether to go EP or UP?
Yes, well, unfortunately, one of the biggest factors, which are fees, is very difficult to talk about at the moment because the fees for filing and renewing a UP have not yet been set, and so we can't really compare them with the fees for filing an EP, although, as I said earlier, we have those guide sums from the European Commission. However, other factors include the strength of the patent, the confidence that the patentee has in its validity, and therefore whether it would be a good idea to go down the UP route because the patentee is confident that it would survive any central revocation attack. Another factor is to consider the market for the patented product, both where the patentee's product is sold and where the competitor's product is sold, and in how many countries of the European Union those products are sold in. If it's only one, then the UP will be too expensive and too effectively large a right to justify covering and protecting that particular country, and the national route would be the chosen route in that particular scenario. But all these things have to be considered.
Oh, somebody once said that a giraffe is a horse designed by a committee. Do you see the Unitary Patent and Unified Patent Court as a giraffe or as a thoroughbred race horse or maybe as something in between?
Well, the UP and the UPC have been a very long time in gestation. And if we had waited for a racehorse, this system would just not have have come about in my lifetime. What we have now is a workable but not a perfect solution. We have one patent potentially for the whole of Europe. This is something that is going to happen, and we need to embrace it. We certainly live in interesting times.
And when do you think this is going to come into effect?
Well, the official word at the moment is that it's going to be the end of 2015, but everything indicates that actually the timetable is slipping, and it looks as if 2016 will be much more realistic.
Thank you very much for these insights, Catherine.
Don, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Catherine Stevens is a partner at Bird & Bird in London, England, and the joint head of their intellectual property department. If you'd like a copy of Catherine's paper, it's available on the Bird & Bird website, and we'll put a link to it on the page on iplawpodcast.com that relates to this podcast. Or you can simply contact Catherine Stevens at Bird & Bird. For further information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You've been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Breskin & Parr LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.